Creator, the one lover, has with you tonight. But before we continue, we're going to now be automatically quiet and say message.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Spiral Ballroom. Please note the fire exits that are situated in the three corners of this room and are indicated by the green running man symbol. In the event of evacuation, please do not use the lifts. In a fire emergency, a continuous warning tone will operate. Should this happen, you must leave the building by the nearest fire exit and assemble at the far side of the car park. Arrangements are in place for the safe evacuation of mobility impaired persons. Please speak to supervisor staff in order that the emergency procedures can be explained. The entire Spiral complex is a no-smoking area. Should you wish to smoke, it will be necessary to leave the building. An induction loop facility is available for hearing aid users. Please turn your hearing aid to the team or telephone setting. To avoid disruption to performances, members of the audience are asked to turn off all mobile devices. Thank you.
I have a number of apologies for Athens. I have written out Councillors Green, Harris, Harwood, Kircher, Lewis, Marmot, Patterson, Shannon and Strong. Are there any others?
Councillor Dennis, if I've run in the light.
Did you get that?
Councillor Smith and Councillor Dennis both running late because of traffic issues, transport issues.
Thank you. Minutes of the meeting held on the 31st of August 2017. Councillor Lee.
I'm glad to approve those minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Councillor Cameron.
Happy to.
Thank you. You've all heard the proposition. Those in favour?
Agree.
Those against? Carry. Those in case of any other business in London? Terms and announcements. A reminder that, in line with the code of conduct, any declaration of interest needs to be declared immediately prior to the item present. I'd also like to mention the fact that this year the chairman is holding volunteer achievement awards, which is open to anyone in North Hertfordshire. At the moment, it's doing very well in the Commons, obviously, but we are lacking young stars, which is anyone under the age of 21 who's doing anything for scouts, etc. So if you know anyone, could you think of a proposal? Public participation? Nothing. Right. Report on delegated decision, minor changes to the constitution, deputy executive role. Councillor Neal.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. As members will notice, this is a report of the acting corporate legal manager, and it refers to what really are minor changes to the constitution. And members will have noticed, as they've gone through Appendix 1, that the amendments refer to the fact that we have added the deputy chief executive role to 14.6.4 and 14.6.5, and they are the two minor amendments, and I recommend that to the Council here this evening. Thank you.
Happy to second, Chairman.
You've all heard the recommendation. Are there any comments? Well, please propose to go to a vote then. Those in favour? Any against? Carried. Next item is item 7. Councillor Royce.
Thank you, Chair. There is an amendment I would like you to note on page 10. Under item 3, outside bodies, it should read anybody of which you are a member or in a position of general control or management. The NHDC Code of Conduct was last reviewed in 2013, and as outlined in the Standards Annual Report in April, this was due to review this year, together with the approach the Council takes towards registration of interest. The proposals were put together after considering any national changes and had extensive input from the independent person and the reserve independent person. They were considered by Standards Committee and it recommended the adoption of the revised code of conduct at page 19, Appendix A, which also includes the minor amounts suggested by the committee. The report sets out the full nature of the proposed amendments to the code under paragraph 8, although significant ones are that 3.7e, a new obligation to attend compulsory training. This would, however, only apply if a statutory officer and group leaders have agreed it is compulsory, or council, cabinet, or a committee resolves that it is a compulsory, or the monitoring officer or standards subcommittee directs a councillor to take training following a standards complaint. Also, I'd like you to take note of 4.7, a requirement to register two of the current variable interests on the proposed register of interest form: gifts and hospitality, and membership or management of an outside body. Also, that's 6 and 7 have been merged, and new councillor speaking right is included. This is to deal with situations where a councillor has a declarable interest and wants to speak to an item before leaving the meeting. It would not apply to disclosable pecuniary interests or informal meetings. With regards to the councillor declarations, you will see the revised arrangements are proposed so that each councillor will complete a councillor registration of interest form, and this will be placed on the councillor's NHDC page. The Standards Committee considered the proposal and has recommended the adoption of this approach. The register is at page 43, Appendix A, and includes the minor amendments suggested by the committee. If approved, these changes would be publicised and apply in the new municipal year from the 4th of May 2018. Some other changes would be required to the Constitution as detailed in the report, and training will be arranged before and after the implementation date. The recommendations to Council are those as printed at 1, 2 and 3 on page 10. Thank you, Chair.
I'm pleased to second that, Mr. Chairman. I reserve my right to speak.
Any discussion on this recommendation?
Thank you, Chair. My sense of chronology is not that good, but I have a slight feeling that we had this debate on the 10th of October. Before the latest concerns, revelations, scandal, suspensions that have affected Parliament, admittedly not immediately local government, though there will be some, I'm quite sure. And I wonder whether the chair of the Standards Committee thinks that we should be looking again at the Code of Conduct as it applies to issues of bullying and harassment between elected members and staff, or whether indeed we're taking advice from the Local Government Association about the work that they're currently doing on this matter. Because I do think that the 10th of October we weren't discussing these matters at our Standards Committee, because the issue was not massively in the public eye other than in the entertainment industry at that time. Thank you.
Chairman, can I just say that we haven't sought advice at this stage, but Councillor Billing will be aware we do have quite an extensive guide to the Code of Conduct. which if you, I mean, the basis of the code sets out the groundwork, but the guide on the code, this is a guide that's obviously approved by Standards Committee, could incorporate interpretation that deals with that, which obviously helps guide anyone, including the Standards Committee or Subcommittee, if they are considering a complaint. So we could deal with it that way, rather than refer this back to the Standards Committee to look at it.
I was just thinking there's more work to be done.
Chair, I wasn't suggesting... a referral back, you may have noticed. I just was indicating that there may be further work for us to do in the light of recent developments.
Councillors Jones.
Thank you, Chair. I'm somewhat concerned about the new compulsory training requirement. I'm well aware that it's been difficult to get members to attend training. And I think that perhaps we ought to think about the reasons why that is. It may be that some of it has perhaps not been delivered in a way that makes it very accessible, makes it very relevant, and some of it perhaps hasn't been very good. So I think we need to think about how we deliver training for members. I think my concern about compulsion exists on two fronts. Firstly, it may be compulsory, but there will inevitably be members who are unable to attend because they're elsewhere, they're unwell, some age yet. Are we going to proceed against them as we would for another breach of the code of conduct? If we do, I think we then risk proceeding on what might be considered quite a minor matter. And if we don't, then we're differentiating between one part of the code of conduct and another. And I think the other problem with compulsory training, you know, might be best summed up as you can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You can make the member come and sit in the room, perhaps. But they can do emails, or look out the window, or take 40 weeks. They've met the requirement. You can't have a rule that says that people must learn. And I think that's what we actually want people to do. We want them to learn things rather than just turn up to training sessions and not benefit from it. So I hope we're never going to use this practice, but as I think there's some real issues about how we deliver member training, but compulsion is not a solution to this in practical terms.
Thank you. Just a quick one on behalf of members. Of course, we all hope that we're going to be in this august body for many years to come. But I wondered if I could have an answer to what would happen if any of us had to leave from electors or health or anything. Is there a default position that the members register is then clear of the interests which have been declared there? Or are they there for all time? Or is it incumbent on the member to get hold of the officer in question and get them taken off? I mean, I say this because perhaps, like many people, when you stand to be a councillor and you're not necessarily aware of the transparency that will be required of you until you get your new members pack. We all of us have put ourselves forward a bit, and there's whether we have addresses and anything there, other interests that we have in the area. So I'd like to know if there is a court position that these things have taken off if we ever lose our position for whatever reason.
Yes, thank you, Chair. In the report, I try to explain what our current arrangements are, and that's manually we take the information and put them onto a spreadsheet, and that's loaded up onto the website now, which obviously could potentially lead to errors and could potentially lead to information remaining on the website longer. The proposal is that your scanned form will go onto your individual page, on the NHDC website, obviously have the signature redacted, and that page, obviously you don't continue as being obviously a councillor, or you're no longer elected, whatever the reason is, that page is taken down. And obviously you will have for a certain length of time retain your declarations form, but that will be disposed of in accordance with our retention and destruction policies.
Have any more discussion on this item? Councillor Clark.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to clarify, there are changes to data protection laws next year in May. Will the current revision of the Members Code of Conduct and the information in there be another area of extra work, because I wholeheartedly agree with the comments made by Councillor Billing, not calling for a referral back. This is extra work ongoing. In data protection terms, I know there's still some way to go, unhappily.
Have any more comments? Councillor Rice, would you like to come back?
That is fine.
Right, as we've all discussed this, we'll now proceed to the vote. Those in favour? Unanimous, carried. Item 8, Councillor Cameron. Councillor Weeks, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman, this proposal is to fund food waste cans. Now that we have agreed to charge for green waste, we have to take food out of the brown bins, and I'm sure members will know the reason for this. We therefore need a separate receptacle for residents to post their food waste whilst awaiting collection. These proposed caddies are 23 litres in size, which is thrice the size of the small kitchen caddy that members will have at the moment. Alternative collection methods have been looked at and are detailed in the report under various paragraphs. So far as the financials are concerned, Mr. Chairman, I pass this to my colleague, Councillor Julian Cunningham, but reserve the right to call the matter back so that I can make a recommendation later. Thank you.
Councillor Cunningham.
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy to second the recommendation. I will talk about the financial aspects. When Cabinet reviewed this, or it took this decision in October, we were totally aware of the fact that one of the options was to move to a weekly food waste collection, and at that time the proposal on the table was to have solid 20 whatever size litre containers they are. At that point in time, it was unclear as to the precise cost and whether there are any other options available. This report is actually addressing the other options which have been considered. This is, I think, the most environmentally friendly. It's also the most economically sensible solution. This council has a long history of encouraging people to recycle. And we're actually quite good at it, and I think this is an important step in continuing that trend, and it is important that we actually do provide these environmentally friendly and reasonably cost-effective containers.
Would anyone want to comment? Michael's got a move.
Chairman, before you comment on Michael, thank you. I think I need to declare an interest. As the portfolio holder for waste management at Harts County Council, I therefore could say I have a pecuniary interest because of the policies which we adopted at Harts County Council, which these may well comply with what the contradiction of, and therefore I will not participate in the talk debate, nor will I vote. If you can call that, please, Chairman. Thank you. Councillor Biggs, have you got to do this? You have moved in that proposition.
Chairman, I've got a recommendation that we expend £132,000 out of the council capital programme for this forthcoming year to purchase the caddies.
Can I second it, please?
May you be a third at this time? Happy to second the recommendation, Chair.
Councillor Hill.
Thank you, Chair. I did indicate earlier to speak, could I just ask the legal officer whether I need to declare my interest as I'm on the Community Waste Committee Panel Act, Cabinet Panel Act, and Property County Council?
Neither of those members will make any personal gain out of the situation, so I will not.
Potentially it might be a declarable interest under our code.
Yes.
And obviously you have declared that, and that would be a matter for you to declare that.
So am I able to vote?
Ultimately it's a matter for members to actually make that decision, and you have to decide. Potential bias and predetermination you have to take into account. Obviously, if you're voting in this instance now, then obviously you have to consider whether you could participate in anything at county level.
Councillor Mew, you wish to comment?
As a county. As a county council member, I do not sit on the waste panel, so is my interest just declarable and I can vote on this matter here?
Councillor Dennis.
Is it my turn? Thank you. I'm quite pleased that we've actually got a item in respect of the waste contracts that's come before full council this evening, given that some of the most important items involved in this decision have been taken away from council, in particular the decision to charge the green waste in the first instance, which has led on to us needing to separate out food waste. What's disturbing to me is that in respect of that decision, we weren't given full, frank and honest cost-benefit analysis, etc., etc. Yet it's very reassuring in this report that there has been some effort taken to provide us with alternative scenarios, and they say, actually, no, the caddies are the right way forward. I'm slightly worried that we've also had a variation in the financials on this, but it is very good to see that we are actually now at this stage, in part in respect of the waste contract, getting some form of transparency. It's just extremely disappointing that it's only this one small item. And it's quite hard to see how we can be asked to vote on something that is relatively insignificant when all of the major decisions have been taken, given we're supposed to be a democratic body representing the people who have put us in this office. Thank you.
Councillor Jarvis.
I mean, as Councillor Dennis has mentioned, it's interesting that the council gets to make a decision about buying some small plastic boxes for £132,000, but not about the principle of spending something like £10 million on reconfiguring the services that the council provides in a fairly substantial way, contrary to the views of many local people. It's also interesting, isn't it, that the cabinet felt able to make a decision on this issue when they actually didn't know what was going to happen about this part of it, or indeed some other parts. However, we've got ourselves into a situation where, as a result of the decisions being taken, the food waste is there, we've put in the perfectly adequate brown bins that everyone has, and we have to do something different. The alternative we're offered tonight is a scarcely credible alternative of buying enormously expensive paper bags. Now, I don't know if that is really the only alternative, but if it is, it's clearly not a sound one. And if the council is committed, which it appears that it is, going down a route that doesn't have the support of local people and will introduce all sorts of other issues, then I guess he's going to have to spend this money on these plastic containers. We appear to be in a position where the Cabinet has already decided, essentially, that the Cabinet and the Council will have to agree to this.
Councillor Thing.
Thank you, Chairman. As Councillor Hogan's predecessor was the portfolio manager for waste disposal at the County Council, I do not feel minded that there is any interest declarable, maybe declarable, but it's certainly not a community interest. And I have to say that I am delighted that this authority has taken the view that if they are to make a change, because the alternative, in my honest opinion, is to put your food waste into your general waste bin, as certain other authorities, such as Welling Hackford, have done, which is environmentally absolutely disastrous. And frankly, I think what we proposed here makes the best way of dealing with the rising volumes of food waste in an economically sensible and environmentally sensible way. Heartily endorse the proposal. Yes, it is more expensive for this authority. 100,000 quid worth more expensive, but it is the right thing to do.
Councillor Beings.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to declare an interest in this subject, but not a declarable one or a pecuniary one. I think it's quite extraordinary that the portfolio holder started his opening remarks by seeking to remind us that the Council has made the decision to start charging for green waste. I thought that was a little bit below the belt, since quite clearly for some of us it has not been a matter of the Council deciding this, it's been a matter of the Cabinet deciding this, no matter what anybody else thinks about it. I would remind everybody in the room that whilst it may have been within the gift of the Council to do so, it would have been rather more democratic, sensible, engaging, and in every other way pleasant to have allowed this decision to be made by the whole Council, as indeed was the case at East Hart. And maybe the Cabinet didn't like the decision that was made by East Hart, but at least they made it available to all councillors representing all of their constituents, as we try to do, but sometimes, as in this case, find it impossible to do so. So, of course, I will not vote against the provision of exciting new double-sized food waste caddies, but I'm still absolutely appalled at the way we've come to the fact that we make a decision of this sort of full council, but the really important decision we don't bother with for all our councillors and all our constituents to engage with.
Councillor Weeks.
Thank you, Chairman. Sorry, I don't wish to split hairs, but I did not say we, the council, have decided. I said we have decided to charge.
I don't hear that with us. Sorry.
Have we any more comments? Would you like to see the vote then, please? Those in favour. Against. Carried. Item 9. Councillor Cameron.
Thank you, Chair. This is a notification to the Council of an urgent decision that was made and has been advised in the Member's Information Service, but as our constitution requires us to do, we are bringing it to Council at the first available opportunity. I don't intend to spend a lot of time talking about the proposal which is there, it has actually happened, but the real problem on this one was
to take part in the business rates pilot. It had to be a county-wide recommendation, and it had to include all of the district councils. The timescale of getting that put together and sensible recommendations made, unfortunately, it was to a stage where it was not possible to go through the normal process and allow scrutiny of it. That being said, anyone who's read this will see that it is a process which will possibly bring some substantial benefit to the council, and there is, because of amendments which were made by the government at the last minute, no downside risk at all. So happy to formally confirm the situation.
Councillor Deegan.
I'm pleased to second that, Mr. Chairman. I reserve my right to speak.
Does anyone wish to speak on this item? Councillor Chris.
All right, I just have a few points of clarification. On the forward plan, 6.1, it says this report does not contain a recommendation on a key decision and has not been referred to in the forward plan. But 6.2 seems to indicate that it is a key decision and it was referred to in the forward plan. That is the first question. 6.2 also has a typo in it. It's a decision twice used. The next one is 7.2. At its meeting, it doesn't say whose meeting. I assume it's cabinet, but it doesn't say it. And then finally, 8.2, it says, it is forecast that a business week pool could provide additional funding to the council of around 1.1 million. However, in 10.1, it says it's the pilot that gives 1.1 million and the pool gives 0.4 million.
So, John, would you like to comment on that?
Thank you, Chair. If the report is unclear, then I do apologise. The background is that at its meeting on the 20th of September, Cabinet made the decision to delegate the decision. So there are two decisions, if you're still with me. At that point, the proposal had been promulgated, but there was still a very significant amount of work to do. And at that point in time, we were not at all sure that we would or wouldn't take part in a pilot, or that there would be a pilot. So the actual decision of Cabinet was to delegate, and this is confirming the actual delegated decision that was made, but the urgency provisions meant it could not be referred to scrutiny, and as I say, the Constitution requires us to bring it to the Council at the first opportunity, which is what was being done there. As far as the 10.1 is concerned, the business rate pilot is the one which is being proposed, which will bring the 1.1 potentially million pounds to the council and all the other councils in Hertfordshire. But it is the business rate pool which this council has participated in, certainly in two of the last 3 years, it might be three of the last 4 years, which is a fallback situation, and if we are successful, and there's a very big if at the beginning of that sentence, if we are successful in the bid to DCLG, then the first charge, if we can use that word, on any money we get, will be that all the districts who would have participated in the business rates pool will actually receive as a first charge against the pilot money, the money we would have got from the pool. And At this point, I think it's getting quite complicated. I'm not doing a great job of explaining it, but happy to try and answer questions on the group.
Thank you, Jim. Just to clarify the question about 6.1 and 6.2 on the forward plan, 6.1 refers to this report before council tonight. That doesn't have to be on the forward plan because it's not a key decision. 6.2 refers to the delegated decision that was made, which was a key decision. So that's what those two paragraphs are referring to.
Right. Anyone else wish to comment? In that case, would you please note this recommendation? Item 10, appointment of acting modules. Can I ask how many roads we do that time since we can tie up with it?
Get to a bit about the recommendation. I think the Chief Executive would like to present the actual body of the report.
Thank you, Chair. This is one of those rare occasions where I present a report to Council. There's actually very little to add to the report that's before you this evening. Following Mr. Roach's appointment as Deputy Chief Executive, as the report identifies, it would be inappropriate for him to maintain the position of monitoring officer to the council. The proposal before you this evening is that the acting monitoring officer, Jeanette Thompson, who is very experienced and has appropriate skills, experience, and qualification to undertake that role, is appointed as acting monitoring officer to the council. That's an arrangement whilst we go through the next stage of the corporate restructure. Which, as you'll recall from the report to you in July, was starting off with the appointment of the Deputy Chief Executive and then moving on to the appointment of the new Divisional Directors. Thank you, Chairman.
Councillor Lee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. As those of you know from our constitution, the officers of this authority are not allowed to recommend items to members at full council, and therefore, members, it falls to me to recommend that the appointment of the acting monitoring officer should go to the acting corporate legal manager, and I would ask members to support that.
Councillor Cumming.
Very happy to second those recommendations, Chair.
You've all heard the recommendation. Have any comments? In that case, we'll proceed to the vote. Those in favour? Unanimous. Thank you. Next item is questions for members. District wise survey, Councillor Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask the leader of the council, what is the sample size for the district wide survey that is currently being conducted?
Councillor Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The size is 1,000 respondents. Because it is a district-wide survey, quotas are set on age and area to achieve a cross-section of responses. The data is also weighted by age, area, gender, working status, and ethnicity at a district level to ensure that the data set is as comprehensive as it could be and as representative as it could be.
Councillor Clark, have you supplementary question?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank the leader for the answer. Given the criteria she spoke about, I'd still like to know, why is a survey of 1,000 residents adequate when the views of a much larger number is not paid attention to, as in the recent waste survey?
The district-wide survey should not be confused with a consultation. One was a consultation, one was a survey. The district-wide survey is very similar to all the other authorities in the county because it is something that most of us do on a 2 or 3 year basis. With regards to the consultation, as you will be aware from our constitution, if we are looking at a major service change, then it goes out to a consultation. I realise, I presume, the point that is trying to be made is why are we going to look at the district-wide survey and perhaps take action or not take action or vice versa on the consultation. We have taken action on most of the things that came through from the consultation, but I will point out to members it is a consultation. This is not a referendum.
Thank you. Next question is staff in the North Hampshire Museums and Community Facility, Councillor Steers Hanson.
Jenna. Thank you, Chair. In the interest of openness and clarity, I should point out that my wife is chairman of the said branch that you mentioned in this next question. However, as we don't debate or vote on this, I don't think we need to make a formal declaration, but it's just a matter of clarity.
Thank you, Chairman. All members of the Council who have received a letter from the Unison branch expressing the concerns of staff regarding the staffing of the museum in Town Hall. Will the Leader of the Council ask Councillor Hill to convene an urgent meeting of the Joint Staff Consultative Committee to address the matter and make recommendations?
Mr. Chairman, my response to Councillor Steers Hanscom will be quite brief. I will not be asking Councillor Hill to convene an urgent meeting of the JSCC. Staffing matters are for the senior management team and ultimately for the head of the paid service. I would add, which is not part of the question, it is highly unusual for Unison to circulate a response to a consultation regarding a proposed restructure, as this does certainly not accord with normal arrangements with Unison. However, the remit of the JSCC does not extend to the points that Councillor Steers Hanscom has raised.
Councillor Hanscom,
do you have a separate question? Yes, Chairman. I'm very disappointed about that answer because, and as indicated by Councillor Leavitt, we all know that our staff union, the Unison branch, is a very moderate and sensible branch. And the reason that I imagine that it's taken this unusual step is the seriousness of the situation that our staff find themselves in. And I hope the Leader of the Council would agree with me that not only should we take seriously what our staff are saying, they're looking at the staffing of the museum, the archaeological work that's absolutely essential to the district, the exhibitions, and if we're talking about making commercial decisions in the council, surely opportunities are there in the museum and the brand new facility there for some commercialisation to take place and some income for this council. I would hope that the Leader of the Council, whether she can officially say it, will be saying behind the scenes to our officers that we should be taking these things very seriously, and I am very disappointed because a Joint Staff Consultative Committee is the opportunity we have to talk to our unions, that we will be able at the next meeting. There is a meeting coming up in the next month which I sit on, and I should certainly be asking a question at that meeting as to whether we would be taking this seriously and taking it forward. And I hope the Leader of the Council will agree with me that we should take this very seriously.
I had a bit of difficulty, Mr. Chairman, finding the question in there. I think that was more of a statement than a question. However, I do agree with Councillor Steers Hanscom that Unison is a sensible and reliable union. and because of this, I can confirm that the officers are looking at all the responses that they have received to their consultation and will be responding to the staff affected by the proposals. And where valid points are made, officers will look at any appropriate amendments.
Thank you. No submotions. Councillor Bradley.
Yes, I'd like to note that I have a disclosable pecuniary advantage as I work for the civil service, but I'm not likely to be mentioned in the Paradise Papers in the near future, so I just want to put that forward.
Okay. Councillor Albert.
Just in advance of the motion, Chairman, I would also like to declare a pecuniary interest as a serving civil servant department for work of pensions.
Chair, I'll
just clarify. Just to confirm that both Councillor Radcliffe and Councillor Albert spoke to you when I was the school monitoring officer. I confirm they're able to move and second the motion, and then they will be leaving the room once they've moved it and spoken.
Councillor Logan.
Thank you, Chairman. I must also declare two interests, actually. My first one is to declare a peculiarly interested in that my wife is an employee of North Hants District Council and as such her pay, and that's what we're discussing tonight. I consider that to be a disclosable peculiarly interest. Secondly, I must also declare a declarable interest, again because my wife is chairman of the NHDC Unison branch, and I believe the pro forma for this motion originated from Unison, so therefore I will leave the room for this matter. Thank you, Chairman.
So, I hope you've read the motion today. It's really important, obviously. This matter wasn't addressed in yesterday's budget in any real terms. And this council urges the government to scrap the public sector pay cap. We also urge the government to adequately fund councils to pay their staff a decent pay rise in line with the cost of living. Now, the Office for National Statistics report for March 2016 reports that 5.354 million people work in the public sector. In some towns and cities, one in three people work in this sector. It is economic madness to suggest that capping public sector pay is good for the country. The suggestion that the trickle-down theory benefits society at large in the long term is a fallacy, in my opinion. It is more likely that trickle-up economics is far more effective. The public sector pay stagnating and the cost of living rising, it is becoming extremely difficult for public sector workers to manage their income. With the price of petrol, food and childcare costs rising, and other extras such as the brown bin collection fee creeping in, it's no surprise that austerity isn't working. There is little or no extra money in people's pockets to spend in their local communities once they have paid their bills and the necessities of life. You can see by the number of shop closures on the high street that the economy isn't thriving. Economic growth is the lowest it has been since the Tories came into office. Yesterday's budget confirms that failure, with growth and wage forecasts revised down in every year of the forecast. I have worked for the public sector for most of my working life, and I have seen the effects the pay caps had on me and my workmates. I spoke to a member of staff today who told me she can't afford to pay her rent in this area, so she has to ask her mum to help her out. Another colleague told me that she had to eat at her grandmother's house a couple of times a week to get by, and another member of staff says that the increasing cost of living and her £700 per month childcare costs leave her with little to survive on during the month. It is no wonder that serious further offending is rising when there is hard-working people who work in the probation service who supervise murderers, sex offenders and high-risk service users are impacted by concerns about their day-to-day existence. This cap impacts upon the quality of their work and their sickness absence. The failure to recruit staff due to poor pay and worsening conditions means temporary staff are employed, which reduces productivity and damages customer service levels in this case. Not one part of the public sector is any more deserving than the rest. So think about the local plan here, and think about how those probation and police staff, the firefighters, the nurses, the council staff and civil servants
are going to serve our communities locally when they can no longer afford to live here. I say scrap the cap.
Have we a second? Councillor Arnold.
Chair, before you carry on, I'm remiss of me not to declare a pecuniary interest because my son is an employee of this council. So I will now leave the chamber as well.
Yes, I'd like to work for Department for Work and Pensions and its predecessor organisations for nearly 37 years. And I think I've not seen a time, I think during that period that I've worked, and been proud to work as a civil servant, where staff that I work with are just faced with such poverty, such poorness, just not being able to manage, especially in many of our junior grades. And sadly, the failure, I think, this week of the Chancellor to adequately tackle the issue of public sector pay, I think does sum up the government's attitude, I think, to its workforce. I'm not sure if they don't care. I'm not sure that that is right. I just don't think they understand the problems of their workforce right across the public sector. It failed to set out, I think, a clear end to the cap for it to be scrapped or put additional funding into departments and public sector organisations. And I think that is genuinely, Chairman, a wasted opportunity. We think, and I certainly think, it shows, I think, the crisis there is that the austerity programme has created. And now is the time we need to change. Staff have had little or no pay rise for 7 years. But in that time, everything has gone up. Inflation is running at around 3% at the current time. Staff want a fair day's pay for a fair day's work. And many staff have been working for 15 or 20 years in their current grade and still not reached the maximum of pay for that grade. That is an absolute tragedy. Firefighters, we saw the work that our firefighters did in Grenfell, are earning now £2,000 less in real terms since 2010. A midwife, £3,000 or less. A modest pay rise isn't unaffordable. And we believe that a pay rise also helps to boost local economies. Now, those of you who are social media geeks like me will have obviously been looking at, I think, the excellent tweets that North Hearts Council did just the other day about our day. 1 million people work in local government. They manage, as North Hearts Council and the communications team adequately and excellently set out, things like our ballot boxes, environmental services, customer services, waste partnership, preventing fly tipping, care line, safety checks at nature reserves, museums. We should value our public services. We should pay them fairly, colleagues. And I do believe, I hope you will support this motion. I leave the room to let you debate it, but I do hope you will unanimously support this motion. Thank you, Chairman.
So therefore, unless I'm advised otherwise, I will also leave the room. I hope there's enough room out there.
Based its pay scale for staff on the public sector pay scale. And the very reason that it stopped doing so was because it realised that the pay cap meant that wages were no longer keeping pace with the cost of living. And when I say cost of living, and I refer to the living wage, I mean the real living wage, not the rebranding of the national minimum wage, which is an absolute fallacy and can't possibly be held up as providing what modern families need to get by on. This pay cap is something that does negatively impact so many people in our society, as both Frank and Ian have said. And what I would ask pretty much everybody in this room is to not think of your lives growing up, but think of your children, think of my generation and Adrian and the 21-year-olds coming through now trying to find their way in the world, being paid on a very, very low wage when you consider how hard it is for them to get on the housing ladder, how people are being priced out of renting in their hometowns, how people are having to move away further and further from the places that they work and commute to work, and are then also effectively having a secondary tax on jobs in the form of season tickets because they can't afford to live a sensible distance from their offices. And maintaining this 1% pay cap for council workers, for doctors, for nurses, for firefighters means that it is perpetuating the cycle of poverty and the cycle of austerity. It's hurting, it's not working, it is not fair, it is not reasonable, and actually there is no economic case or foundation for maintaining something like this. It's more damaging. If you look at what Henry Ford did with economic policy in America and how he helped lift his factory workers out of poverty and into a cycle of prosperity, that is a more positive, stronger model. And the pay cap, as it stands, in my opinion, simply perpetuates the negative push downwards on some of the hardest working people in our society, and it is not fair. There is no need for this government or for this council to be so out of touch that it doesn't recognise and it doesn't acknowledge this. And if we come together as a united cross-party body and say to the government, this isn't fair, this isn't working for our constituents, please, please, please think again for the good of every single working person in this country, because the pay cap also means that people have less disposable income, which means they don't spend that money in our local shops and businesses, and we see that effect on the high street, don't we? So I would urge everyone in this room to think very long and hard about what is a very sensible motion. It may be a token gesture to government, but big things start with a small gesture a lot of the time.
Are we ready to discuss this motion, Councillor Bean?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I think it is very difficult not to agree with the two earlier speakers. I think Councillor Dennis perhaps got a little bit carried away, but certainly the two earlier speakers on this side of the chamber, we do see the hardships. We do think that the pay cap in the public sector has gone on too long. We also think that the 1% has resulted in wages in the public sector falling considerably behind the UK rate of inflation. However, we are going to support the motion, but I would like to put an amendment to it, because on this side we do feel that perhaps we can get our voice heard in more areas than what your motion is saying. And Mr. Chairman, I would like to put an amendment to the motion from Councillor Radcliffe and seconded by Councillor Albert, and I would like to read out the amendment, if I may, Mr. Chairman, please. That North Harts District Council recognises the values, the work of its employees and those across the breadth of the public sector. It acknowledges that the government's imposition over many years of a public pay cap of 1% has resulted in wages in the public sector falling considerably behind the yearly UK rate of inflation. This has meant a real terms cut for our employees. It has also led to difficulties in recruitment and made public sector employees feel undervalued. This council will work with our MPs, all our regional and national representative bodies, to urge the government to scrap the public sector pay cap and fully fund the award in line with the cost of living. That's the amendment, Mr. Chairman, and I would like to propose that.
Thank you, Chair.
Happy to second the amendment reserved. I'd like to speak to it.
Councillor Boone.
Thank you, Chair. I think we find ourselves in a possibly not entirely unique position, but an unusual position, that the original mover and seconder of the motion are not in the room. And so I will take it upon myself, if I may, to just looking for yes, to accept the amendment on their behalf. I do so, and I was going to make the point anyway, that of course I will think of Elizabeth and Adrian in doing so, as Elizabeth asked us to do, but we also all have examples in our own families of very hard-pressed public sector workers. I'm a retired one and was assured I didn't have to declare an interest as a retired public sector worker. But I think it's not just even the awful issue of housing ladders and the inability of young people and older people now to afford to get onto the housing ladder. The thing that stuns me most about what has happened with the pay cap for public sector workers is a number of them who are actually turning up in a state of some desperation at food banks across the region and across the country. And that's something that really hasn't ever been the case before, even back two, three decades ago when teachers were very poorly paid compared to the rest of communities and home nurses. So this is a particular crisis. I was desperately hoping that we would be able to withdraw the motion altogether today following yesterday's budget. I also almost got lured into a sense that the Chancellor was going to do something about the pay cap, whereas in fact all that's happened over the last few months is picking off particular parts of the public sector in order, I suspect, to drive a wedge between different sectors of workers. So I sort of, in an odd sort of way, welcome the amendment, because it's really nice to be able to have consensus on something as serious as this, and accept it on behalf of my colleagues who don't even know what's going on.
Councillor Jarvis.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, I'm pleased that there appears to be a consensus about this. There may at one stage have been a need to bring about a reduction in public sector pay, but that time is long since passed and the policy should have moved on to reflect the changing circumstances. And I think we need to remember that that's not just for the personal circumstances of the people involved. The country, local government and national government, depends on persuading good people, people of ability, that they should work in the public sector. We all need that. We need the most able people not to rule out a career in local or national government because they feel that they will never be adequately rewarded. We need those people to work in our public services as well as in the private sector. And for that reason, I think it's high time that we recognise that this sort of level of restraint on public sector pay is long since ceased.
Any more discussion on the amendment? Councillor Cumming.
Thank you, Chair. I'm really going to say very much. Personally, I work very closely with several officers in this building, and I'm aware of many of them, and they're all deserving of my unstinted praise for what they bring to North Hertfordshire. And I expect that I'll be brutally honest, no, they're not paid enough. I have to mention the fact that pay freezes are not just the public sector. Yes, some private sector people are giving pay rises, but I am fully aware my own daughter, who hasn't had a pay rise of any description for 7 years, and fortunately her husband has, so they manage. I'm desperately trying not to make this a political debate, because it isn't. I do have to make the point that this administration has recognised
is its problem, and remind you that in our medium-term financial strategy, which the council approved 2 or 3 months ago, it was factored into the budgetary process increases in the pay rises from 1%, which has prevailed so far, to 3%, 3%, and 2% going forward. That money is in our budget. If we are allowed to pay it, then I should be very delighted for it to happen. But yeah, it would be nice if the government are going to do this, that they also make the funds available to make it happen. Because, to state the blinding the obvious, every penny that this council spends comes from our council taxpayers, and it is the services we provide to them for that. And I'm happy that we are, by the sound of it, going to pass this motion, I hope, unanimously.
Are we ready for comments? In that case, we'll proceed to the vote on the amendment. Those in favour? Unanimous. We now go back to the substantive motion which has a vote on with the amendment. Any more discussion on that? Those in favour? Unanimous again.
Chairman, I think it wasn't unanimous. I think there were at least one. There was at least one abstention.
Oh. So show again. Those in favour. Those against? I'll ask for abstention at this time.
Two.
Thank you.
Happy to formally second and reserve my right to speak.
Councillor Whitehall.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you very much for this motion. Members will recall that at the last full council, we've had a fairly lengthy and I hope quite a valuable debate on the issue of homelessness and loss of sleep. And Councillor Billing has mentioned some figures that we expressed then. I have a problem with percentages because it always depends when the start number is taken and the ending number is taken. A number was quoted in August, I think, and generally the number of people sleeping on aspects is higher in some months than the official figures are taken in November. In fact, the numbers for this year have been taken tonight. This today is the day the official numbers are assessed, and that has to go to the DCLG. So I don't quite recognise the 300%, but there, I would agree there has been a general increase in the numbers over the years. I don't want to really get into a numbers game. This is about people, not numbers. And when we say we deeply regret the increase, actually we shouldn't regret that anybody sleeping on our streets. This gives me the opportunity really to update the council following our discussion last time. I did mention that we were outsourcing an outreach team to work with people that are on the streets. I think I mentioned 22 individuals last time. A number of whom aren't actually rough sleepers, some asleep, beggars, some asleep, thinkers, and we assessed around about 30. It's a very transient population. It's not easy to get an absolute accurate figure. I'm pleased to say that 5 weeks ago, the outreach workers started. We've actually commissioned them until February, and Cabinet has agreed to continue funding for the next 2 years for this extremely important work. So they started 5 weeks ago. At that time, they assessed the numbers at around about 20. I'm pleased to say that in those 5 weeks, eight of those 20 are now in accommodation. Some are in permanent accommodation, some are in the Stevenage Haven, North Park Sanctuary, where there's move-on work being done. So hopefully that work is going to be people that will bring them into some accommodation in due course. But they're not on the streets. They also there's another 5 people that they are working with, and hopefully they will be housed in some way or another very soon. 5 people they know about or have heard about, but can't get them to engage with them at the moment, but the work is going on. I think that leaves 2 people who cannot now be found. They visited various locations, they can't be found. So the outreach service that is run by Stevenage Haven, with a conjunction with the charity Resolve, is actually making quite a lot of progress. In this. Number 2 on the motion recognises that the true numbers of hidden homeless, including those social services, sleeping cars and vans in the district, are much need to be higher than the 30. Yes, well, of course they are. There are people that we don't have too many sleeping in cars. We know of one particularly, but we do know that a few people do social serve. But it is very difficult to get the numbers of those people because we can only help them if they contact the council. And we would always urge people to contact the council if they're in that position. Of course, the Homelessness Reduction Act, which comes into operation next year, gives everybody the same level of service, although it won't necessarily be housing so easy for everybody to say number three on the motion, that recognises that without support for these people with mental health problems and addictions to drugs or alcohol, these numbers will increase. Yes, that's absolutely true. Without the support, it will increase. And the support is out there. Again, our outreach workers are working with other agencies where there are these problems, and they are working with those agencies. So hopefully we won't see an increase in that, because they are getting the proper amount of support out there. Number four, I think that's the recent death reported in Letchworth, an attack like indigenous people who were sleeping well. Obviously, we regret any death. The death of the person in Letchworth, there's been no official reason for that. It wasn't, we understand, anything to do with violence. And we don't know of any recent attacks in Hitchin involving our sleepers. We've checked with the police, and they have no record of any attacks on our sleepers in Hitchin recently. So if anybody's got any information on that, please let us know. Now, it says this council calls for a comprehensive assessment of the true number of bus sleepers in North Harts and in Leeds. That has been done and is being done. I've got a list here broken down into actually names and the situation. That has been done. We do rely on the number of people in putting into that, because as I say, it's very difficult to get an exact number. The outreach workers, the police, there's street line where people can report where they believe people are sleeping rough. But it's very keen to try to get accurate numbers, but it is very difficult. And I say this evening is the one day of the year when the official figures have to be given to the DCLG. And finally, on the motion, this council calls for continuation of the work carried out in conjunction with key stakeholders to prevent homelessness and support people in our district for sleeping rough. As I've explained, that is being done. Certainly, there's a lot of work being done in this respect. The government has put a lot of, fortunately, a lot of funding into this. I think that was in the budget yesterday. There was I heard the commitment from the government to halving the number of bus sleepers by 2022 and eradicating it altogether by 2027. We're hoping that we can achieve this faster in North Hertfordshire, but it does. It does take a lot of work and constant work, and working with the professional agencies to do that. And we're doing exactly that. And as I say, we are seeing the benefits so far in quite a short period of time. Being sad here, so I actually looked up the definition of a council motion. Robert's Google. It's a request made by a councillor for an issue to be discussed at a council meeting. We've done that and we're doing that, and we did that last time, and for a decision to be made. I can't see in the motion that there are any decisions that need to be made, that haven't already been made, and which are already being put into effect. And so for that reason, I would not be keen on accepting this motion this evening. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman. Whilst it's pleasing to hear the response from Councillor Lutwell about the work that's ongoing at the moment regarding homelessness, I still think there is an answer in terms of the motion that's being put forward to the council tonight, and that's around the Homelessness Reduction Act. And I'm pleased that, again, that Councillor Lovell do make reference to that, and I was going to mention a bit more detail about it. This is probably not the time for that, but it's going to be the whole purpose of that act, which I don't think is a definite date, but I think it's likely to be around about April next year that it will come in. But the whole purpose of that act is one, to prevent homelessness and to help achieve positive outcomes for those who approach the authority seeking assistance with homelessness. And whilst it's pleasing that was mentioned, of course that act will put a whole number of duties onto local authorities in how they deal with homelessness. And what I would hope is that, whilst it's been mentioned tonight, that there will be, on the back of this motion, a report to all the members of the council on how this local authority intends to enable that act. And what exactly is going to happen, and what we're going to be required to do. So I would like to have a request in terms of seeking a formal response to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Ringle. Councillor Steers Hanson.
Thank you, Chairman. Councillor made a number of comments regarding the motion, and in particular, he referred to in item 4 to an attacking pitchy. Certainly I know there were reports some months ago of an attack that appeared in the local media, so that was what was being referred to there, and certainly I know from being in the Town Centre Manager's office that there has been some sort of violent action on particular evenings in Hitchin that have been a great deal of concern. So that's really what that's referring to. I was hoping, and we've had a breakout of consensus in the previous motion, that perhaps that will follow on into this one. And I don't see why not, actually, because at the last full council meeting, we had a question, and Councillor Ruffin was able to give some information as a result of that, which we very much welcomed. And this is moving forward from a question to a motion. And it would seem to me that particularly in regard to the bodies that can come forward and the work that the council has, it's recognised the council is already doing, that to pass this motion would simply be saying and reinforcing what the council is doing and acknowledging what the government is saying, what the new Act next year is saying, that we all need to work together regarding homelessness. So I hope we will be supporting this motion.
Yeah.
Chairman, I won't be supporting the motion in the sense that I have clearly heard this evening an unequivocal statement from the executive member in respect of the two points which are distilled at the end of the various points. So this is a comprehensive assessment for the true numbers of us in the North House. That has been done, and it's ongoing. So, frankly, there is nothing in this motion as to part one of the motion that needs to this council to take further action, because it's happening now. As to number two, a continuation of the work, well, again, the fact that we've got this outside body, this outreach programme, indicates that we are continuing to do the work, and we will continue to do the work. We have a statutory obligation. And if you really, really, really want to be nitpicking and look at this motion, it's indicating to a degree that this authority is falling short of its obligations. I do not accept that that is the case, Jim. And as for the new legislation, the emerging legislation, there's no reference that I can see within this particular motion to that particular act. But even if there was, the fact of the matter is it will become a statutory obligation. And of course this authority, as part and parcel of its processes, will be required to indicate to members how we propose, how it proposes, to deal with its duties, its statutory duties. That paper will come forward. I actually haven't read the version, but I suspect it's possibly too early. But I would expect that this authority will bring it forward. And as every other thing that we do in this authority, there is a strategy, a policy, and there are and implementation checks. And it is inconceivable to me that this authority, with a piece of legislation which is of so huge importance in terms of how we deal with the disadvantage in our population, will not go through those same processes. So I won't be looking for this. But it's not because I don't care. It's because I think, frankly, we're already doing it. And I would have to say to Bernard and the team, thank you for enlightening me about the extent of the work we're doing. I actually haven't done it. We've gone this far. It's jolly good. Keep it up.
Councillor Lovett.
Thank you, Chairman. Like Councillor Fake, I'm in a difficult position with this one. I cannot support the motion as it stands here, I'm afraid. I really, really agree with the sentence expressing the first four paragraphs and the fact that it's drawn to attention how difficult and how much worse this homeless problem is getting. However, there are factual inaccuracies in that. And particularly number four, it's based on rumour and hearsay about the attack. As Councillor Mudwell said, there's no record of it anywhere. We know it happens, but as it stands in the motion, it's rumour and hearsay, and I can't support it for that factual reasons. And coming back to the last two points on there, the one or two there, we're doing it already. How can we ask the council to do something again that it's doing already and doing this ongoing process? So much as I would love to support this motion, I fully support the sentiments behind it, but because of the way it's written, I'm afraid I can't.
Well, there's clearly a lot of effort being put in on the Conservative benches in order to find some reasons to justify voting against this. Which I have to say, I think is a pity. I mean, I don't know if it's an attempt to deny the Labour Group a hype headline in the comic, because I'm up for that, but I don't think this will achieve it. I think, actually, it'll get them a headline in the comic, because the story is, you lot all voted against it. But if we look at what's being said here, so it says we're concerned about the increase in the number of rough sleepers. We've been told there has been an increase. Who here isn't concerned about that? We've been told there's a number of hidden homeless. I think we all agree that's the case as well. I think we recognise that. If we don't recognise that support for these people with mental health problems and addiction problems, if we don't provide that support, the numbers will increase, I'd be very surprised. And I'm sure we all regret the recently reported death. And if there has been an attack addiction, I'm sure we'd regret that as well. But we're told that it's not supportable because it calls for the council to do things that it's doing already. Except the second one calls for it to continue doing something. Now, you can't continue to do it if you're not doing it already.
True.
So, do you not want to continue doing it? Is that why you're going to vote against this motion? And if it's just point one that you don't like, why didn't you propose an amendment? There's nothing in this motion that any of us could object to, except possibly that it's been proposed by the Labour Party. Now, I think that what we managed to do in the last motion was to make some small amendments to produce something that we all agree with. That can easily be done here, although actually I would suggest there is nothing that any of us could object to in this motion at all.
Anyone else wish to speak on this motion? Councillor Dennis.
Thank you. I will be brief. I think that one of the main thrust of what we were getting at is that rough sleepers is not just narrowly defined as people who are sleeping on the streets. It's everybody who's not in a conventional bed, in a house, in that safe space. It's that overall hidden homeless type thing. Now, as I understand it from Bernard, the assessment that's going on tonight is looking at street homeless.
And I think what we'd like and what we need is an authority to make sure that we do meet the needs of the, all of the people, as far as it's possible, recognising there are some sofa surfers that just don't come to us for whatever reason, so it is hard to capture that data, is we need to find a way to get as accurate a representation as possible of those rough sleepers. So if somebody wants to sort of help tighten up the wording on part one of the this council calls for item, that might be helpful, and we might be able to all agree then on the outstanding points going forward and help Bernard to carry on driving the really good work that he's been doing on these issues.
Anyone else? So we proceed to the vote then. Okay. Councillor Ludlow.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Just a couple of points. I have to say to Councillor Jarvis, we can't control what the comment thinks, and even if we tried it, it wouldn't work with it. So they can print what they want to print. I agree with comments of my colleagues, and they're just a thought here that a motion that asks us to continue doing something, if we have a motion about everything this council does, to continue doing it, we'd be here to the early hours of every council. And that's my difficulty with this thing. You know, I think we're all together. I hope every one of us in this room is all together in wanting to keep up the fight to eradicate rough sleeping and homelessness in whatever form. I think we're all together on that, and I'm not sure that this motion would put that push forward anything more than we're doing now. I'm very happy. Perhaps if there was another motion in the future with some sort of tighter wording that we could actually all come together and I just can't see that there's any great reason for agreeing a motion that supports everything that we're doing. And that's the problem with this actual motion.
I don't want to get into a technical debate about what's a motion and what isn't a motion. It does seem to me, if I've understood the position correctly, this is a minor view of the whole question of homelessness. But I think the new legislation imposes a statutory duty on this council to do what point two is saying. And I don't want to pick up Councillor Johnson's argument, but it is just continual. If we didn't do it, we would be in breach of statutory duty. And I don't think we really need a motion that requires us to do that.
Any more comments? I will proceed to the vote. Those in favour of this motion? Those against? And how many new stations?
Two.
Right. That completes the business of this meeting tonight. I wish you all a very happy.
Thank you.